Are there any questions? Anything to say?
When I'm laying down, because I'm very much used to this kind of laying down all the time, and my kind of meditation is this one for since I'm a child.
So
I don't know.
I'm going to say it loudly so they can hear you, also to make sure I understood.
Okay.
She's asking about lying down, and she says, I'm very familiar with this because as a child also, this was my meditation way. Yeah.
So I don't know if I do properly.
Uh-huh.
I used to do when my mind was going and it was like a dream, alive, I was following, and the result was practically the same.
Yeah.
But now.
Practically the same as what?
As images and feeling from inside going out and materializing by images. I was not conscious of feeling inside something I couldn't explain. Now
okay.
I can put some names.
I didn't understand. Now I know it. So, when you lie down, what happens?
So now, when I lay down, I wonder if I have to stay on the tailbone,
uh-huh.
or the back,
yeah.
if I follow my mind.
Yeah. Okay. Could you hear? Yeah. When she's lying down, she doesn't know if she should do something or not. So the options she suggested were staying with a place in the body, for example, or following the mind. So as usually happens, it's very related to the talk that I want to give, so that's good. But also we answer directly. Go into your question directly. The most simple, quick answer would be neither. Neither doing nothing nor doing something. So one way that could feel like would be, I suggested to Kati yesterday to feel her tailbone whenever she feels like it. So for example, to feel her tailbone or her lower belly, but very lightly. So not like feel your tailbone. And if anything else happens, then feel your tailbone. But using the ability to feel the tailbone and the fact that for you right now, that's a place where it's a way in for you. So in the past may have been less accessible and now starts to be accessible. So it's good to spend time there.
Okay.
But lightly, and then the mind may come, but not following the mind. Noticing that following the mind happens. But sometimes when you're resting and it's dreamlike, in the same way that it's interesting to be in a place in the body that has been hard to stay with in the past and now starts to be possible to feel or feel in a new way. So let's call that newness for now, or springtime. Starting to wake up there. There can be springtime that starts to lead the thoughts. It can feel like I'm spaced out, I'm dreaming, I'm daydreaming, but we can notice sometimes afterwards, sometimes just with practice, that sometimes in the resting and the dreamlike quality that can come, maybe with a slight connection, a light connection to a place of springtime in the body, for example, place where it's new to be able to be, which means it's a little hard also to be there, that there's something different about the way the thoughts are going. It's not just letting the mind go into the habits. There's something different leading the mind. The pictures have a different quality, and they also start to lead maybe to the same place that being the tailbone starts to lead, so to speak, which isn't a location, but it is what I'm going to call an edge today. So is that enough for now of your question? Great. Anything, anyone else? I heard about an experiment that was done with living creatures, our ancestors, bacteria. And they were bacteria who genetically could not digest milk products. So partly I love this experiment because it's so simple. So there was a bunch of bacteria, which doesn't take up much space, in a little dish, and then many dishes the same. And all of those bacteria had the same genetic problem, or the fact that genetically they were unable to digest milk products. And then they were left with only milk products to eat, nothing else. And then the scientists came back after whatever amount of time would mean that the bacteria either ate or died. And they were all healthy, milk-eating bacteria after, I don't know, a few weeks. So this is bacteria. To show the power to adapt that we have as living things. When we notice that we're stuck somewhere and we're hungry and there isn't our food, if we can actually notice the stuck feeling, it's a good beginning. It's a really good beginning. So what apparently happened, they did the experiment, of course, many times because they thought this was not possible. And then they found, it seems like they found out, I'm not sure now in this moment if they're guessing or if they actually watched it happen. So this next part I'll have to check and tell you and confirm. So they either guess that what happens or they know that what happens is the bacteria came to the point of gotta eat or die. So that sounds like a point we wouldn't want to arrive at, but we do actually want to arrive at that point. Gotta eat or die. Just also echoes of the poem from yesterday. Enough of death, what about living? Gotta eat or die. And then the organism itself just starts to throw out different genetic possibilities. So what about if we change this gene? What about if we change this gene? What about this? Until something works. And then something works, and then you eat. So, entering a retreat, for example, for the first time, can be hard. I remember my first retreats because I understood the teachings in a wrong way that didn't work. And so I was really hungry for some actual nourishment. I was just pressuring myself the whole time. The first retreat, luckily, was only 2 days long. And afterwards, on the way, walking back from the meditation center across Bodh Gaya to the Burmese monastery, where I was staying as a guest, not as a nun. I was never a nun in this life. I just started laughing so hard I couldn't stop, and it was really painful, and I couldn't stop. There was just so much pressure that needed to be released. But luckily, the body knew how to do that. I found myself quite a few times on the floor in pain from laughter in the week after that 2-day retreat. So it's good that there's a release mechanism. It's good that it's possible to release when we've gone down a dead end. And for example, for me, I was trying too hard. Another thing that happens is giving up too soon. Formulating an opinion or a kind of conclusion so soon that you kind of close down or whatever. It's good that there's release, but it's also good to really stay at the dead end sometimes and find out what's happening. So whether I misunderstood the teachings or whether the teachings didn't apply to me or whether the teachings were completely wrong, something had to change. And there is in my own living, the capacity to come up with, what about this, what about this, 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 until the way opens. So on the first retreat, really leave room for that in yourself when you come up against something that's actually bringing out the worst in you. If that happens, maybe it won't. And very much the same if this is like your 50th retreat. And you feel like, stuck, no food here, or whatever the feeling. Give room, and you need to have your feeling into your way of giving room to the living quality in you that can throw up some possibilities. What about this? What about this? What about this? What about this? And it's very practical. It's not a mental process. It could be a completely nonverbal process. So we could say, it's not exactly like this, we could say, let the body just try different things until something finds the way in or through. Finds the edge. So partly what I mean by edge, another example of living tissue, and not in this time our ancestor, but the beginning of our body, when we were just a few cells. Where the body grew was between the nourishment and the spacious support. So between what would become the placenta that would give the food. So between the yolk, we were an egg like a chicken, all of us. That was our vehicle for a while. There was the yolk, just like a chicken egg. That became the placenta that would feed us. It didn't become our body. It became the thing that fed the body. And then there's the other sort of balloon of cells that became the, what is it called? The whole thing that goes around the body.
Amniotic sac?
Yeah, the amniotic sac. The sac of liquid. Yeah. So there was like a kind of double balloon thing that was nourishment and sac, so swimming pool. None of that was actually the body of us as a, not even a baby. Where the body grew was in between the two, right in between the two, where the two met. This little line started to come up that wasn't the spine. It was before the spine. And then that kind of died back down into the belly, and then something like a spine came. And we started to have directions up and down and front and back. So I like that as an experience that some people are able to feel It's called cellular memory. You can actually feel that when this body, this weird thing that we think we know, and this in some ways so familiar and in some ways just impossible to understand, that this used to be, or it grew out of, because it's not exactly the same cells, is it? But it grew out of that. It couldn't be here without that. Or just through imagination as an example or a metaphor, the space between what nourishes, so the food, and what kind of gives us space to float. It gives us room and it gives us something, some buoyancy, some way to be buoyant, to experience our weight and our buoyancy. Buoyancy is like floating, what brings you to the top. It's your job on this retreat to ask me when you don't understand, okay? That will help a lot. But we already have a good, really simple example from Kati's experience where simply experiencing the physical tailbone for her is an edge, is what I'm calling an edge. You can call it something else. It's a place that's got a sense of newness. It hasn't been accessible before, it hasn't been possible to feel before in the same way. Now she can. And so please do. When it feels right, not like as a job. And so it's a little bit like a feeling of springtime where things are, where the life in things, the life in our experience is coming visible or coming into a way that we can feel it. So I'd like to call it springtime, then newness, if that's okay. And it doesn't stay in the same place, like maybe next week, next month, or next year, it won't be the tailbone.
Yeah, it's already somewhere
else. It's already somewhere else, okay.
I was wondering that you confirmed.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's what's so interesting about spiritual practice and life, is that we can wake up our ability to tune to the springtime rather than to the place that we first felt the springtime, or the place that we felt springtime so strongly, or whatever. And we let something follow the springtime, and it's like, it's very, very much like surfing, which sounds maybe like a kind of not serious metaphor, but it's so a good metaphor. A kind of place where forces come together and have a movement. And the feeling of tuning to staying in the right angle and balance so that the forces are coming together in the way that you stay up or in being carried by the wave. I've never actually stood up on a board, I just body surf myself. That's what we're here for, isn't it? So it's a really precise place in a way without being a place, without being a location. It's where our courage calls us and our playfulness, like kind of a not caring, our caring and our not caring, takes us there. And it continually leads us into another dimension and another and another. And what I mean by another dimension is sometimes it really feels like it's a different world. And other times it's just there's such a different quality happening that you've never been able to experience personally, or some kind of surprising refinement. It's very demanding. It's extremely demanding. isn't it? Without any pressure, because pressure, and we're off the wave. And that's why so many traditions talk about it as a love affair. Because what else could help us be there? Why else could we be there without pressure when it's so demanding? So precise. And ever more precise. Without being any place that we can stay. And so, even though I've never stood up on a surfboard in this lifetime, that's a great image, because there is, it's like to really stand knowing you do not need to hold on to anything, and that holding on to it would exactly not work. But the sticking to the board and the angle and the way that the forces come together so that you're kind of, it's almost like being locked in a good way. It's so stable in such an unstable situation. So this stillness that takes over, where we can really feel heavier than any weight, like really sticking to a place that isn't a place. And that brings about this buoyancy, or they happen at the same time. So that's springtime at the edge. And I want to share part of a Rumi poem and part of a life-changing friendship that happened thanks to someone in this room. Let's see. Rumi's great because I'm looking for a particular poem and all the poems are about the same thing. So so the feeling when it's time for a change. And it's very much like when winter is actually over and the beginning of spring is happening, but nothing's visible yet. And so there's the feeling of needing food and there isn't any. And in that recognition that there's hunger, that there's need, that's already the sprouting underground. Like when the things start to fill and bulge before they bloom. It's exactly then we feel lost and it's impossible and we'll never. I remember one time I had a lot of work to do. It was really hard work. And one of my really good friends saw me like working. And I like to work also. And I was liking the work, but it was hard. And the friend just said in this right moment, it could have been the wrong moment and just been a disaster, but in the right moment, the friend said, "I feel like I never see you not worrying." So in the wrong moment, that could have just been like, oh. And on top of everything else, I'm always worrying. But it was like, that's true. It wasn't worry. It was just pressure. It was tension. And maybe that's partly why it was easier to hear. And just be like, oh yeah, I could just do this work without any pressure. And there are many times that we go through that process over and over again where we let go of the pressure or whatever your thing is, the worry or the feeling lonely or whatever. And then we slip back in, we slip back out, we slip back in, we slip back out. And then it's actually over. And we may not notice when it's over. And that's such a lovely thing. Because it's not a doing that I did. It's not a doing that the I does. It might be that a friend saying later, "I think I don't see you worrying. I think I notice you." With lots of energy or whatever.